Again, Simon 6 of Kuntres Achron. In the top pages, it's Kuf Samach corresponding to 319. Yes, down the bottom of the page there. It says, David's Miras Krasula. We have been talking about the importance of various things, about the Torah and learning the Torah, halachas, these things like that. In this one, we're going to be talking about the effect that even one single mitzvah can have on the entire creation. That's the deal over
here. Okay, cool.
So it starts at David Zmiras Karasi Lahu. The Gemara in Saita, David HaMelech wrote the Tillim. And he was really quite happy of the fact that he wrote the Tillim. Okay, the Tillim he wrote was as a result of the Maisa with Bathsheba. And Tillim, it says, what did David HaMelech accomplish by writing Tillim? Is opening the portal to tshuva. And made it easier for us types to do tshuva because we get to say Tillim. There's a Hayom Yom from recently that talked about Zohar illuminates the soul, and Medrash excites the heart, and saying Tillim with tears washes the keli, washes the psyche.
It was like 2 days ago, right?
Yes. So Tillim is it's a very unique book, Tillim, in that when a person says Tillim, they're doing two things, not one, but two. They're learning Torah. Even if you don't understand the words, since it's Torah Shebiksav, Torah Shebiksav does not need to be understood. If you're just saying the words, as the expression goes, like Tillim, then you are learning. It's considered as doing something. And it's for all those stories that you hear of people back in the shtetl that they could barely read, but they knew Tillim by heart. And when they were working, they were saying Tillim and all the good things that happened to them because they said Tillim. You're also davening when you're saying Tillim.
Right.
Because that's what David HaMelech's intention was in writing it, is that a person should be able to beseech Hashem by saying the words of Tillim. And it really helps if you, for example, understand what it is that you're saying. But when David was finished with the Tillim, so he was feeling really good about himself. And he was like hanging out, and he was like, I don't know, on the veranda, or he was taking a walk at night or something like that, or maybe it was early in the morning, and he heard the bullfrogs croaking.
Okay.
And he realized that they were doing a better job than he ever could.
Right. Because of their praises.
Yes, because they were doing a better job praising Hashem. Okay, so now, there is a verse in Tillim, which is in chapter 119, where David HaMelech actually refers to the Torah as songs. Okay? The exact verse is 92. I think it's 119. It says 92. Anyway, so Zmiros Hayasoli. These were songs to me. So the Hashem took a little bit umbrage, and this is all brought down in the Gemara Saita. David's Mirz Karasi Lahu. You put a question mark there. You're calling my Torah songs? That's the best thing you can say is about is a song? Hello? So what was the result of that? So it says that when they were able to capture the Ark, the Holy Ark, the Aron HaKodesh, back from the Plishtim, David HaMelech forgot what he was supposed to do with the Ark, and he put it on a wagon. Instead of having some Levites from the descendants of Kahath carrying it. So there was a dude by the name of Uzi. The wagon hit like a rut, and it started to fall off. And Uzi went to grab it, and he got zapped.
Right.
Okay. End of celebration.
Yeah. But it carries them anyways.
So yes. So it would definitely be detrimental to the celebration if somebody died because of it. So why is it that he forgot? And what's this whole deal with he forgot the dinner? He says this is the it says this is a a law that any child who learns Chumash knows that the Avodas HaKodesh of the B'nai Kos was al kaspeim, was on their shoulders, and not with wagons, because Moshe didn't get wagons for Kehos. This is the Kriya that we read by Hanukkah at the end of Parshas Nasoi, because they were told, you're going to carry this stuff. So a five-year-old learning Chumash knows that if you're from Kehos and you have to carry the Arnei Kodesh, you have to do it yourself. You can't put it in a wagon. So how come David, who was a very smart person, didn't know that? Okay, so he says, now, so v'hine b'zohar shavcha d'raisa v'rananu. And the Zohar, it says that it is that what's the praise of Hashem? Lahavin ma'ahu tishkach b'kadosh baruch hu kishizeh osur umotir. What does it mean to praise Hashem? When you say something, you're learning halachas, and you say something is permitted and something is forbidden, or forbidden and permitted. Mm. Now, the commentaries on this Zohar all seem to jump that there are four other categories to put into this expression. And we did have these before in an earlier letter, four or five, where he used constantly, he would say, Usser, or Pussle, or Tame, or Mutter, or Kusher, or Tahar.
Right.
Okay, so we put in all these other explanations, because it would make, you can't say a mezuzah's treif.
Right.
That would be incorrect. Okay, a mezuzah's Pussle. Pussle means unfit, treif means it was ripped. It's okay. I was tested for Yuridei. I was tested in Kashrus. Okay. So the person was asked a question, Basar Bachal, what happens if this milk falls into that meat or this thing gets mixed up with that? So the Bachar said it's treif. Mm. So the rabbi went ballistic. He said, this is not your mother's kitchen we're talking about over here, where everything that happens in your mother's kitchen is treif. Mm. It says it's called usser. Yeah, so they all have their all nuances. So the Alter Rebbe didn't put that in this thing, which this anyway is like a Rishimitz was written to himself. He wasn't writing this specifically for anybody, so he knew. But the answer that is given over here is that when you say something, all of those things, when something is tamei, that implies that you are forbidden from using it. The word forbidden means usser. Okay, something also, a mezuzah that is pussle, you are forbidden. So the correct expression would be, it is usser to put up a pussle mezuzah.
Right.
Okay, so including this, if we do this, we want to get picky about it, so we can get picky about it. Hinihu al derech ma gadlu maisecha Hashem ma'ed amcha machshav eisecha. So similar also, by calling the Torah praises, you can also use the same question. There's a pasuk that says, how great are your works, Hashem, and very much from the depths of your thought. Which, we had an expression, we had a saying before, b'makam sh'ata matzah gadlusa shakadosh baruch matzah sham ata matzah anvisanusa. We say, ma gadlu maisecha, how great is your work, Hashem. Like, for example, the Grand Canyon, we used this one a couple weeks ago. Okay? Grand Canyon, there's a bracha you say when you see the Grand Canyon. Okay? Shekeichu grasei malei olam. Okay? Hashem's very great in his power in creation of the world. Okay? But on the grand scheme of things, what's the Grand Canyon? It's a big hole.
A big hole.
It's a pebble.
It's a big hole.
Yeah.
Okay? That's all it is, a big hole.
Right.
Okay? We get really turned on by it, but what does the Grand Canyon look like, say, if you would be standing on a planet that's circling Alpha Centaurus? Nothing.
Zip.
Nothing.
A little zip. A little pop mark.
Nothing. Not even. No. There's no way. No way. You could barely see our sun from Alpha Centaurus. Never mind our Earth. Never mind the Grand Canyon on it.
Right.
Okay. So just physically speaking, the Grand Canyon is really nothing. It's not worth anything as far as, you know, the whole entire creation goes. But we get excited about it. We say, wow, Hashem is so great. Okay.
Because he makes a big hole.
If you're So now, but that's what it says. In the place where you find Hashem's greatness, we're saying, you know, Hashem's really great. He can do that. If I'm recognizing it as great, Shamata Mansa Motza Anvisanusa, there you'll find Hashem's humility.
Right.
It's really very low for Hashem. That if Hashem's doing something that's making himself recognizable to me, so that there's not a whole lot there. So praising Hashem on his greatness really doesn't do, you're not doing Hashem any favors. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have this dilemma when the men of the Great Assembly, Ashkenazis Gedolim, formulated the Shemayna Esrei. And there are laws about it, specifically which were more relevant when people davened by heart before the Siddurim became popular. Mm. As to, it says you're supposed to, especially before the prayers were formalized, so you're supposed to start out your Shemayna Esrei by praising Hashem. And it says quite clearly over there that a person goes on, he's going to do everybody a favor. He's going to go Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, Haneira, Harachum, V'chanu, Nerachapayim. It says Mashtikin Oisa. You shut him up. Because at that point, more is less.
Yeah.
If you say Hashem is Rachum, okay, so Hashem's Rachum, he's not Gadol, okay, Hashem's Gadol, he's not Gibor, Hashem's it. So the Anshei Knesset Gadol said, we have to do something, because that's the prescription. So we're going to do like a bare minimum and try and pick adjectives which basically incorporate everything you could possibly come up with in as few words as possible, because at this point, if I'm saying, well, you know, Hashem's all is very much this, that implies, and Hashem's very much not much that.
Right.
Okay, so now, Kihiei Neider, Shekol Ha'olam Esel, Yonah V'Tachtayim, Teluyim B'Diktuk Mitzvah Echad. Okay, it's known, the entire Seder Yistalshel, this really puts us into perspective over here. Okay, this is what it says, that each person is an olam male, a complete world. As we know, that a person has mekayim nefesh achas ki'ilu mekayim olam male, is the expression. A person who saves a life as though they had saved a world. The Rebbe talked about this is the anniversary, the 40th year of Entebbe. So the Rebbe talked about this, that it was not by perchance that unfortunately four people got killed. Mm. And the Rebbe made the point of saying that in the Israeli newspapers it said only four people got killed. But if you're considering every person to be an olam male,
right.
So then you have arba olam ha'is, you have four worlds of Atzilus, Bria, Yetzir, and Asiya. He did not say which one of these four people who were killed corresponded to which world. That far he didn't go, but you guess he's basically saying you get the idea. So four people in this world is like the whole Seder Yistalshelus.
Right.
Okay. We're coming up to Chav Dalet Teves, which is the yahrzeit of the author, the Alter Rebbe. And we're also coming up to Yud Shvat, which is a couple weeks after, which is the yahrzeit of the Friedrich Rebbe. And it's also the anniversary when the Rebbe became Rebbe. So in the first Basa Lagani, the first mimer that the Rebbe said, so he includes in it, he's talking about Avos Yisrael, and he spoke six stories, or five, there's five stories there, of acts of Avos Yisrael that the various Rebbes did. So the Alter Rebbe, he told a story, and Basa Lagani just told it very short, and it's brought down, the details are brought down elsewhere in the Rishimas, the diary of the other Rebbe. So it was a Yom Kippur morning. And the Chazan was doing what Chazans do on Yom Kippur morning. They were exercising their epiglottises over there. This guy was really gargling away over there. And the Alter Rebbe gave him the high sign that he should hurry up. Okay, the Rebbe says, we do, and he knocked off the rest of the davening. So I'm not sure if it was after Musaf or after before Kriyas HaTorah, when it was that he was, that he did this. But it says that he took off his talis, and he took off his kittel, and he put on his coat, and he walked out into the street, and he went into a house where a woman had just given birth.
Right.
And as soon as he walked into the house, he started saying, like under his breath, "Hamakayim nefeshacha achas keilu makayim es oilam kula." The person who saves one life is though he saved a whole entire world. And it says over there, the way I first heard the story was is that he chopped wood. But in the diary of the Rebbe, it said that he took small pieces of kindling and he built a fire on Yom Kippur morning, and he made a fire, and he made soup, because this was a woman who had just given birth.
And her husband's not there.
Her husband's not there, he's in shul. And so here it was, and so later on it got back to the Rebbe that those people, that the story came out, it became public, that the Rebbe did it. And there were people that were saying, the Misnagdim uses against Alter Rebbe, said that Alter Rebbe was Mechalel Yom Kippur, because he built a fire in this. So the Rebbe responded that in an instance of Pekuach Nefesh, it says in Shulchan Aruch, that you have to be Mechalel Shabbos, and who is the person who should be Mechalel Shabbos is the Gadol Shebe Kehila, the biggest, the smartest person there. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise they're going to say, what's going to happen? Someone would say, the Rebbe is not going to do it, I should do it. Who am I? If he says he doesn't want to do it, I'm not going to do it. So this is the person who holds the greatest barometer for religiosity. It's right. Incumbent upon them that they go save this person's life.
Right.
Okay. So therefore, those different ideas of a mekayim es ha'olam, mekayim nefesh achas. So it says we have a major responsibility in Seder Histalshelus. If you ever look at, I always get confused which book it is. Chaim Lozato's Mesilas Yesharim, Path of the Righteous. It's a Musar book. Okay. Chaim Lozato, Lozato was a Mekubal. The first part of the book talks about Seder Histalshelus and the whole way that the world interacts with it and the creation of man. And he goes into the spheres and all this type of stuff. And then at the end, he said, because it's a Musar book, and look what you did when you did something wrong, because you mucked up all of this. Right. Which is basically, the Alter Rebbe says this in one line. Okay, not that I'm taking anything away from Chaim Lozato, but there is a tremendous responsibility which is put on us. As the Mezvitcher Magid would say, and we've quoted several times, it says, Da Malamayla Mimcha. It's one of those statements which is written on like the shtenders or on top of the, where the person davens or on top of the wall facing Mizrach. One of the sayings that people have written is that it's a focus for a person's davening is, know what's above you. Know that which is above you. So the Mezvitcher Magid repunctuated that statement and put commas in. He said, Da. Comma, you should know, mila, that which is above, semicolon, mimcha, is from you.
Right.
Okay, it's the meaning, everything that the whole Seder Histalshelus is dependent on us.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. You have this also brought down in Gemara, for example. We are os, the letter of Basel, the Rebbe every year, would explain another chapter of the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe's last mimer that he handed out. That Basel Lagani that the Friedrich Rebbe handed out was 20 chapters long. So the Rebbe spent 20 years explaining it the first time through, and almost explained all 20 chapters again the second time through. But in Tashin Mem Ches, when the Rebbetzin passed away, the Rebbe stopped saying mimer. So the last 2 years, the Rebbe just took the Maimarim from 20 years prior and checked them over and then handed them out as official Maimarim and said, this will have to suffice for now. So in this year's Ois Zion, he talks about the difference between a Dalid and a Resh. A Dalid is considered a letter of holiness, and a Resh is considered a letter of unholiness, or a true letter, a false letter. Okay? Between these two letters specifically, the Gemara talks, and Gemara Brachos talks about, it's a little brought down in Sota, the ramifications of the difference between a dalet and a resh. Because if, for example, you're writing a mezuzah and or tefillin, and you come up to the verse Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and instead of writing a dalet, you get Hashem Acher. Hashem is another. There's two gods, right, which is exactly the opposite.
Exactly.
Okay. And likewise also, if you're going to be writing a Sefer Torah and you're writing the Ten Commandments, it's also in the mezuzah. Come on, brain. Before it says Elokim Acherim. It says don't worship Elokim Acherim, and you write that with other gods. So you make that resha dalid. So you get Elokim Achadim, which means the oneness of. Don't worship the oneness of God.
Yeah, don't worship.
So you're gonna mess things up over here. And what's the difference between a dalid and a resh? It says, it's actually talked about it. It says a fly could turn a dalid, a resh into a dalid. The fly will land on a wet resh and kind of like go, okay, and it'll turn that little bit hanging off the end that the fly dragged with its foot will turn a resh into a dalid. So the whole spirituality is resting on even minor details.
That's the point.
For example, Im hakarben kosher nasa yichud elyain ve'olim kol olmos lekabach hayosim v'shafam. This is a very obscure example he gives. You bring a sacrifice. Let's say the sacrifice that you're bringing is a burnt offering. Okay, which this is an easy one to talk about because there's not a whole lot you have to do with a burnt offering. What do you do with it? You burn it. That's why it's called a burnt offering.
Yeah.
Okay, so what do you have to do? You slaughter the thing, you take some of the blood, and you throw the blood on the altar, then you break the thing down, you throw the thing out, you cut it into 13 pieces over there, and you throw the whole thing on the altar, and Shalom al Yisrael. Done. Okay, now what happens when a person brings a burnt offering? So the purpose of a carbon generally, and why we have the whole concept of carbonness, is to create a rapport, a relationship between us and Hashem. Carbon, Lashon Karov, meaning to come close. And so when a person performs offers a carbon with all the details in a proper fashion, so what happens? It works. The person comes close. What happens if even a detail is missing? It doesn't work. Every detail has to be in the process, or the process is no process. Because why is it that we know these details? It's not to say, listen, well, I did it 99% right. You know, I got it 90. I did. Came really, really close to doing it perfect.
Right.
Okay, so Hashem would have wanted it to be the way this person did it at 99%. He would not have included that 100th detail. But that 100th detail is also very important. Such that offering or doing this mitzvah without that 100th detail makes it not an offering. And what the person was trying to accomplish in getting close to Hashem doesn't get close to Hashem, and depending what it was that he messed up, could actually distance the person from Hashem. Like, for example, if I decided, you know, I really want to get close to Hashem, and I'm going to build an altar in my backyard, and my altar in my backyard, I'm going to offer up a sheep. I'm going to get myself a Kohen, and we're going to do it. He's going to do it properly. He's going to go to mikveh first. And I'm going to do the sprinkling of the blood you're supposed to over there. I'm going to even make the kli shorish, the way that the vessels are supposed to be in receiving the blood. And I'm going to burn the whole thing on the altar in Shalom al Yisrael. And guess what? Somebody who does this is Chayiv Karis.
Yeah.
There's one small detail missing. He's not doing it in the right place. That's all. Just one detail. Okay? The person's Chayiv Karis.
Pretty big detail.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, what's the big deal? My backyard. altar or the altar in Jerusalem. You know, it's just what's, and I can even go so far, I can be really esoteric about it. What's place to God? God's above place. Okay, we call that Shabtai Tzviism, actually, so. So now, if it's done properly, so then there's a yichud elyon, there's a supernal unity, everything functions properly, va'olam kol ha'olamos, and the whole spectrum of creation is elevated, l'kabel chayosim v'shefam, and everything gets a whole lot more godliness in it. And we all live happily ever after. The Ishina, if he changes a detail, Shikabel, Adam Bismaila Derech Mashal. He decides, you know, it's easier the way I'm standing in the positioning of the altar over here. Be easier if I just did it with my left hand. I mean, think about it, as far as details go, okay, that if it's in Jerusalem or if it's in Oak Park, so you're right, that's a big deal. But if you have everything right, the only thing that happened wrong is that the guy happened to grab the pot with the wrong hand. Okay? And he even realizes, oh, I grabbed it with my left hand. And puts it into his right hand. Once it's got blood in it, sorry. It's no good.
What if he's a lefty?
Then he better learn how to use his right hand. Because a left-handed Cohen was disqualified from working on the altar. Because everything, there's no political correctness over here, everything was built for right-handed people. And if a person's doing it left-handed, you know, as you see, for example, if you see somebody playing guitar left-handed and everybody else is doing it like this and he's doing it like this, boy, I said, well, that really looks weird. He's got the thing upside down. Mm-hmm. You know, so it looks weird and therefore it's disqualified. Kosher, or he accepts the blood. Everything's perfect. But he goes into the kitchen, he pulls out a two-quart saucepan. It's kosher. You know, it wasn't used for anything treif. It's just, that's not exactly the thing you're supposed to accept the blood in. Aishahaisa chatzitza. Or, this is even more obscure. Okay? There's actually a discussion in the commentaries. A chatzitza means an interposition.
Right.
Like when you go to mikveh, you have to make sure that you have no chatzitzas on your body. They're separating between your body and the water. Okay? Mm-hmm. So when he says a chatzitza, what does he mean? A chatzitza between what and what? So, it could even be such a thing that the Kohen, when he's wearing his big day kahuna, it says, V'lavash kahal big al basaray. The Kohen had to wear the Kohen clothes on his flesh. Which would mean, if he had a chetzitza, which could be a scab, for example, a scab which is removable, which wouldn't cause any right. bleeding underneath.
Right.
Or anything else which would be invalidate a woman that she had to remove in order to go to a mikveh, would invalidate him from working on the mizbeach because he doesn't have the clothes al basara. He has it al chatzitzaisav. He has it on his interposition, not on his body.
Right.
So it's even such a thing. And who's going to know? With Mela left-handed, I can see the guy's left-handed. It looks wrong. Okay, if the guy has a scab on his shoulder, he's covered. How do I know even? It doesn't look like anything.
Right.
It's a detail. And the detail is there because the whole creation is set up to work and function in a proper alignment when everything is done according to the dictates of every single detail so that everything does align and keeps in alignment. So then, what happens is this great elevation that the person could have accomplished doesn't happen. The world doesn't become closer to God. And there's no derivatives of great godliness coming down as if it had been done, were it to have been done correctly. Okay, so yes, God micromanages, God is in the details. Yes. Okay, so that's what they say, God is in the details. V'kein b'tfilah, tefillin kasharis. So too also is very important to have kosher tefillin. Mizgalin meichin el yoyin dezun. Tefillin are akin to radio receivers. Okay, a proper pair of tefillin placed in the right place, on the right place, on a person's body, will draw godliness down to that person directly into their brain and heart. That's one of the things that does happen when a person puts on kosher tefillin. Okay, there is a story involving Elimelech Lizhansk and Zushev Anapoli. I may have sold you this story before. They would travel around incognito and do play acting. They'd come to somebody, some a house, an inn, a market, a store, or something. And with their Ruach HaKodesh, they would know that this person is doing something wrong. And one of them would do the play act. Oh, yeah, yeah, I did something like this wrong. I did this wrong. And the other person would say, well, this is what you have to do to correct it. And the person listening would say, wait, I'm doing that wrong. Mm-hmm. Okay, so they came into an inn. And Reb Zusha started crying that he's had his tefillin since his bar mitzvah. And he's never had it checked. And now, here he is, he's an old man already. And he had them checked, and they were l'chad chil apostel. They were never kosher, and he's never put tefillin on in his life. So, what should he do? So, the innkeeper said, wait, you're supposed to get your tefillin checked? And they said, you've never had your tefillin checked? He said, never had my tefillin checked. So, Zusha, who was a sefer, opened them up, and they were never kosher. So the guy was very upset. He's a religious Jew.
Sure.
And here, his whole life, he's putting on tefillin. He never put on tefillin. Elimelech, his brother, told him that he should write him new parshiyos and have in mind his intention in writing them is that when he puts them on, it should make up retroactively for all the times that he put on and it didn't do what it was supposed to do. Okay? And he did it. Unfortunately, within a year, he said, these tefillin were too powerful, so I'm telling the story. The tefillin were too powerful because the innkeeper died. They just blew his brains out, you might say. It was just too much godliness coming down. Levi Yitzchak Berdichev heard about these tefillin, and he said, I want those tefillin. And indeed, Levi Yitzchak had those tefillin. When he passed away, I don't know how it happened, but the Rishon, Rabbi Yisrael of Rishon, got the tefillin. And Rabbi Yisrael of Rishon, he wouldn't daven in them because he was scared of them. But after davening, or Rabbeinu Tam's, whatever else he did, sometime during the day, he would put them on, very quickly say, Shema, and take them off. Okay. It happened one time.
He could handle it.
Yeah. It happened one time that somebody, the Rishon was not around, and somebody needed a pair of tefillin.
Oh, no.
And so they borrowed this pair of tefillin.
Oh, no.
The next time that the Rishon put them on, he went, something's up. And he took them to the sefer, and the sefer opened them up. The parshas were blank because wrong person put them on.
Right.
Wow. Okay. So yes. Anyway, so with the tefillin, so there's all kinds of things which are happening, and why it is so important. It's like, you know, you think about it. This is one of those questions which was really when the Rebbe started the Mivtza Tefillin campaign in 1967. Okay. So one of the objections that was raised is the person putting on tefillin only once, what did he accomplish? You know, you're supposed to put on tefillin every day. This guy, you see him one time, you put on tefillin with him in the back of a truck on a street corner someplace. Not he washed Nagelvasser, or not we know what's going on, if he went to the bathroom or where he's been or whatever, if he's just finished eating chazer, you know, and you want to put tefillin on the guy and okay, you're going to make him a tzaddik. You know, this was brought up to the Rebbe. Mm-hmm. So the Rebbe said, well, about putting on tefillin one time, it says, Ein daima karkafte de loy maniach tefillin le karkafte le maniach tefillin pamachas. It says in the Zohar, there's no way to compare a person who never put up, so what it says is a skull that never had tefillin on it, to one that did have tefillin on it. Even putting on tefillin one time takes the person out of the category of a person who never put on tefillin. This person put on tefillin. Okay? Like he says, when we put on tefillin kosher, so now there's revealed the supernal brains of Zun. Okay, we're not going to spend a whole lot of time on this GPS coordinate over here. Point being is that when a person puts tefillin on their head, they draw down from Chachma, Bina, and Das, as it's divided into Chesed and Gevura, hence the four boxes of the Tefillin, the four parses of the Tefillin. Shehemakar Hachayim Lekol Ha'ulamos. That what are we getting when we're putting on Tefillin? This is the source of all life for the entire creation, is now coming down directly into our heads. Ubadiktug Echad Nifsolim. And with one small detail missing, the whole thing's no good. I mean, there are so many things involved. All the mitzvahs of tefillin. It says in the Gemara that what do we know about tefillin? It's all halacha Moshe Masinai. Moses came down the mountain and said, this is how you put on tefillin. No discussion. It has to have a shin on one side, which is 3, and a shin on the other side, which is 4, and they have to be cubes, and it has to be black, and the straps have to be black. And the parchments have to be, there has to be 1 on the hand and 4 on the head, and the parchments have to be written with engraved lines on the parchment, and you have to use a specific type of parchment. You have to leave cloth, you can't use the chstustus, you have to use the inside skin, not the outside skin, okay? And it has to be, the parchments have to be tied up, and the batim have to be tied up with nerve material from a kosher animal. You know, all of these things are all written down. Moses came down the mountain with all of them. So if something, any of those details is not there, very simple. These are not tefillin.
They're not tefillin. Right.
Okay, it's talked about in the Gemara. Listen, you know, I'm black. You know, it's such a simple color. You know what? I can afford it. I'm going to have tefillin made out of gold. This will be really nice. Okay, you could wear them, but don't say a bracha on them. Okay, make sure you put the other ones on too sometimes during the day. You can walk around with a gold amulet on your forehead, and nothing says you can't. You know, so, but it's not tefillin. And it's the same thing also with all the details of a negative commandment. It's just a little bit treif. Means it's 100% treif.
It's actually like a little bit pregnant.
Yes, exactly. It's just a little wrong. There's no such thing. You know, especially after learning the first 53 chapters of Tanya, there's no such thing as just a little bit wrong. Yeah. Either it's kaddish or it's not. Hilchacham is bainin ma gadlu maisecha Hashem. Therefore, if a person is now going to sit and meditate, how great is the works of Hashem? Shebarivei ha'olonos, and he's sitting there. He's thinking. He's not thinking about stars, or holes in ground, or big rocks, or big trees. He's thinking about the entire expanse of Seder Histalshalus. That's what he's calling the greatness of Hashem. But that's still the cult of Am and everything that's in them. And how's it talked about in Shar Yichud V'Amunah, that how it comes down in the process of coming down through the different channels and the 10 utterances and what has to the different permutations and combinations of letters and switchings and exchanges, as he's talked about in throughout Shar Yichud V'Amunah. And he's really into all of that. And then to think that all that disappears, all that gets really totally completely messed up with one detail of one mitzvah. Now where does this detail come from? Okay, the world is an expression of divine speech. Hashem said, let there be light, let there be space, let there be dry land, let there be herbs, let there be etc., etc. 10 times Hashem said, let there be. Those are an external expression of Hashem's desire, and as expressed through the emotions, that light is an expression of kindness, and the space is an expression of severity, and dry land in the right place is an expression of teferis, etc., etc., etc. The mitzvahs we talked about 2 chapters ago circumvent the creation process. We call something a holy object. Why is it called a holy object? Such as you have to give respect to your tefillin and your mezuzahs and your sefer Torahs and your siddurim and your chumashim v'chulu v'chulu, is because once those things are now declared holy items, their life force is coming to them, not through Seder Histalshelus, not through the creation process, but they're coming directly from the will of Hashem. They are a direct expression from Hashem's will. Okay? So therefore, all the details of what comprise that specific mitzvah are precursor to speech. He says it's coming from Hashem's thought. They're an expression of Hashem's will, and Hashem is now expressed to Moshe, which is now in the Torah, the details of what makes that mitzvah a mitzvah and what makes that mitzvah not a mitzvah. So by adhering to the details, so you're superseding, you're jumping the realm of Hashem's speech and connecting yourself to the realm of Hashem's thought and desire. Because adherence to the slightest detail will elevate the world, that they receive more godliness, and being not careful in a detail will do cause the opposite, God forbid. And with this now, the person will understand by this meditation how great it is, the depth of Hashem's thought, that this is unlimited, without any constraints whatsoever, and the superlatives that he keeps on using, l'mayla in kates v'tachlis, until the very highest levels of all the worlds, shekol chayosim shayfa midiktuk echad memanoi, and that the whole world with all these details that we've been talking about now since the beginning of the book, we're talking way back when we said Tanya b'Sefer Gimel Danida, is all flowing through the slightest detail, shehu nimshach l'makara hu amik machshavta yizbarach. And it is coming down through one very fine detail. Like, for example, it could be something so insignificant as, or comparatively speaking, to the chayas, the life that's flowing through a hair on the top of your head. We know, it's talked about elsewhere, that the hair on top of the head is an external expression of brain. But there is life in the hair, because the hair does grow. In order for something to grow, it has to have life. But the life is so insignificant such that you can cut your hair and feel no pain, because there's a very little amount of life in that. So too also, if you have a detail which would be comparable to, say, like a hair on your head, so not adhering and not taking care of and making sure that channel of that little bit of life that's coming through that one hair will mess up the whole entire world. This now is the whole thing started with David calling the Psalms and the Tillim and the Torah songs.
Right.
So he's very happy. Shahayim Izamim Aramim Lasimcha Chliba Ba'isakatera Ba'isarasai. That he had the opportunity that when he was at his worst, he could still have the Torah and the mitzvahs. And he's just so tickled pink. He is so happy. The story of the Medrash about David Mel. He's in the mikveh. Okay? And he's upset. Can't talk Torah in the mikveh. And he's not wearing his tefillin because he's in the mikveh. He wore tefillin all day long. And he's a king. He wore a Sefer Torah around his neck. Couldn't wear the Sefer Torah around his neck. Okay? Didn't have tzitzis on because he's not wearing any clothes. So he's like, man, I've got nothing going on over here.
Except for Brit.
Yeah. He looked down, saw that he was circumcised. Okay, I got that. they can't take that one away from me. Okay? So he's just so happy. He's tickled pink any opportunity he gets to do a mitzvah. Okay, and David HaMelech says, "Lo pasak puma megirsad shelo yishlo to all of Melech HaMavis." He talked Torah such that the angel of death said, "God, you got to give me a hand over here. I got him on the rap sheet for the right, and I can't get near him. Could you give me a break, please?" You know, cut me some slack. Get me to, you know, it's his turn, hello? But I can't get near him. Achmasha haya mishtabeach b'tehilas hatera mal Yosef. That which he now describes the praise of the Torah. How does he describe it? Zmiras hayuli. They're like songs to me. Okay, he's very happy. He's just like, yeah, I'm whistling while I work the whole business. And he's just like, he's in the groove, and he's just like, Hashem said, what? Neneshal zeh. He got punished for it. Va'amalei kodesh baruch hu, zmiras karasi luhu. He said, yeah, that's all you're going to do is call them songs. And it's interesting. What did he get punished with? Right. He forgot a halacha.
Mm. Right.
That was his punishment. You're so happy you have the Torah, and you're so involved with it. Your punishment is that you're going to forget one small halacha. And the ramifications of forgetting, you know, you put it on a person's shoulder, you don't put it on a wagon. It's not such a big deal. Wagon on a shoulder, what's, you know? He's carrying, he's bringing it. He got it back from the police team.
The ramifications are something.
The ramification was, go
died.
Ask Uzzah,
yeah,
what the ramification
died.
Was.
Ask his wife and kids.
Yeah. And that's what we should take lesson from then, is from one small detail.
How much we affect the world.
We affect the entire creation as well. Meshum she'be'emes my losay zu she'kol ha'olam is betelim legavi diktuk echad memenu hu b'chinas acharayin shel emach machshavtei. Kushur amach amacher b'shem harizal amayim rizal nevelus chachma shelamay l'teir. It says, really, this is just the fact that it's one detail is really all these details. When it comes, Hashem wants there to be something. He wants there to be tefillin. Okay? And he wants whatever's going to be accomplished by putting on the tefillin to happen when people put on the tefillin. The details of all the things happening in there, so they're necessary. Okay? All those details, he calls them acharayim. They're not acharayim like klippa. But they're acharayim, they're secondary, or they're not, I can't say they're not important. They are important. I don't even know what English word to say. But they're not the main thing, but they're a put them all together, they become the main thing.
Mm-hmm. It's structure.
Yeah. You need to have this in order to get that.
Right.
Okay? He doesn't really care that he has this, but he wants that. In order to get that, he has to have this.
You have to go through the structure.
Okay? And it's called acharayim for the same reason. Hashem wants us to have free choice, so therefore Hashem created the wrong choice. Does Hashem want the wrong choice? Hashem doesn't want the wrong choice. But if you could say Hashem doesn't want the wrong choice, he would never have made the wrong choice.
Right.
So you have to say Hashem wanted the wrong choice, but Hashem didn't make the world for the wrong choice.
Right.
Hashem made the wrong choice that we should not take the wrong choice. So these details, it's not that Hashem is creating the world for the details, he's creating it for the big picture.
Right.
Okay, but the details are necessary because
They make
the big picture.
They make the big picture, right. Let's just leave the smile off the Mona Lisa.
Yeah. We're going to stop there. We are on page 320 on the top numbers, which is Kuf Samach Amid Base. We are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines from the bottom at the dot. Aval B'Pnimius Sheba Oimek. And in the English, it's the last paragraph, however, the internal aspect of the depth to be continued.